are welcomed here with Judge Jim Gray, Gary Johnson's vice presidential candidate. Do you want to tell us a little about yourself, Jim Gray?
Well, sure. I was, after I graduated from USC Law School, I actually went into the Navy JAG program. Actually was involved with the charges against fellow shipmates for drug issues and others. Was also a criminal defense attorney. After that, I was a federal prosecutor in Los Angeles, prosecuting drug crimes, among other things. Then I was in the private practice of law, and then was appointed to the bench at the end of 1983, actually, and was on the bench in the trial court, Superior Court of Orange County, California, for 25 years. And now I'm in private mediation and arbitration, and was deeply honored and excited to be requested by Governor Gary Johnson to be his running mate as a Libertarian candidate for vice president and president. And it's one of the most exciting things that's happened to me since the birth of my children, because we are running to win. And if we get into debates based upon not only what we say and what we would do, but what Governor Gary Johnson actually has done, I think our chances will be significant of actually winning the election. We simply have to be in the debates first.
Definitely. And I think you stand as a stark contrast to the mainstream, you know, choice between Obama and Romney, who are about, you know, 2 centimeters apart, whereas you're way off in some distant part of the political sphere, completely opposed to these guys who just want to expand state power.
Well, and in so many ways, I call them Robomni. They are just joined in just so many issues after issues, certainly maintaining the healthcare system. You know, honestly, Romney designed, was the architect of Obamacare. You think he's going to orphan his child? All of these military adventurisms that we have going on around the world. I mean, we're in Somalia, in the Sudan. We're talking about putting troops in Mali, for heaven's sake. Both the Republicans and the Democrats, Obama and Romney, support this sort of thing. Governor Gary Johnson says no, that unless someone, if Iran doesn't attack us or our allies, we're not going to bomb Iran. We're not going to go to war with Iran. So it's really stark. We're on one side, they are on the other. The Patriot Act, my goodness, you know, Paul Ryan, the now vice presidential nod to Romney, he voted to reinstate the Patriot Act. He had voted for the TARP, the bailouts. He's taken money. You know, it's just silly that they are on one side, Romney, as again we say, and we are on the other. Again, get us into debates. People will see there is a third way, that there is a way that is financially responsible and socially tolerant. We're in the political mainstream. No one is going to accuse Obama of being financially responsible. In fact, we have added 70% more on our debt just in his 3 and something years than before. And no one is going to really say that Romney is socially tolerant. You know, we're different. We are in the mainstream. If the people see who we are, where we are, what we will do, and what the governor has done, and I'm convinced once again that we are exactly what they want, what they crave, and again, when they see it, what they will demand.
I definitely hope so. And certainly we can see that people are getting excited about the ideas of liberty. There's a huge movement, obviously, with the Ron Paul campaign that is kind of fizzled out at this point. It feels like the campaign sort of imploded. And over the last few months, like, people are a little aimless and they're wondering, well, what's the next step? What do we do? You know, Dr. Paul's out of the race. And obviously you guys are a very viable and legitimate option for people that are interested in advancing the cause of liberty. So, you know, how do you think is best to reach people from that camp and bring them into the Gary Johnson Liberty camp?
Well, we tell people that I probably will only see Governor Johnson 3 times during the campaign. The first was the Libertarian Convention, the second was Freedom Fest, and the third was at Paul Fest in Tampa a couple of days ago, that both of us were there. We take it so seriously. We are a member of the same family. We don't welcome the Ron Paul supporters to our family because they're in our family already. And in fact, Ron Paul is certainly one of the founders, the patriarchs of that. And when they see that Ron Paul, according to his own prognostication, will not get the Republican nomination, what are they going to do? You know, some people say that, oh, they should reform the Republican Party from within. Well, when I was talking with them, I had an opportunity to address the assemblage, said, look, do you feel comfortable? Do you feel welcome in the Republican Club? Do you feel that the rules were the same for you as opposed to others? Do you feel that the rules were the same regarding not having invited Dr. Paul to to be at address the convention. You know, how many representatives were there at Paul Fest from the Republican Party? None that I knew of, but Governor Johnson was there. I was there from the Libertarian Party. Carla Howell from the executive director, Jeff Neal, the elected representative, his wife, Nancy Neal. We care. We are the same. And yes, Ron Paul will be always that beacon of liberty. But after the Republican convention, that torch of liberty is passed to Governor Gary Johnson. And we welcome those their support. What are they going to do? You know, clearly, they're not going to support Obama. Clearly, they're not going to support Romney. And it's not their nature to sit on their hands and stay home. We are the same. And I fully expect that the Ron Paul supporters, after they get over the Republican convention, will be a part of us and will not break stride and continue to carry that torch of liberty with the Gary Johnson, Judge Jim Gray campaign.
Certainly. And I'd like to add that, of course, a lot of people are looking not just to, you know, win elections, which is only one part, and that's obviously a part you guys play, but it's also about spreading the message, getting people on board, and making it known that we are a cause that is, you know, gaining stride, gaining power, and that our numbers, you know, can continue to grow, and we're looking to be, you know, the next mainstream. We really want to be known as the next mainstream idea. We want to displace statism as the driving force in this country. So,
well, exactly right. You know, liberty does work. We tell people, you know, just be libertarian with us this one election. If for some reason prosperity, equal opportunity, and freedom doesn't work for you, you can always vote back politics as usual in 4 years. And we are in the mainstream, and liberty is exciting. And we're raising people, and you guys know this, we're raising people in our country, young and old, to be dependent on the government. Now, that's done intentionally, because if you're dependent on the government, then you vote for that government. But it doesn't work. On the other hand, we are actually coming at Obama from the left. You know, we really would repeal the Patriot Act. We stand for liberal values. We're simply classic liberals. We would repeal the death penalty. Why? Well, it isn't working, regardless of your philosophy. We would repeal the National Defense Authorization Act, for heaven's sake, a direct frontal attack on our civil liberties. We would actually repeal welfare for the wealthy. You know, the idea of giving subsidies to people not to raise corn, and giving subsidies to people to drill for oil. You know, if it works in the economy, in the free market, people will do it. But why should the government be involved in choosing winners and choosing losers? Why should the government choose corn to be involved with ethanol when other products actually work just as well or better? Let's let the market decide those things. So we're classic liberals. Most people are. And we're classic conservatives. We really come at Romney from the right. We really would reduce the size, the intrusion, the cost of government. It's just so stark. So like you say, we are in the mainstream. Of course, the idea is to elect libertarians to office, but also to just open people's eyes to the fact that, okay, big government maybe sounds good for some people. It just doesn't work. Now, I was speaking about 2 weeks ago now to a group called Los Amigos, which is in Orange County and where I'm from, in California. And I asked them, you know, most of them are Hispanic. Most of them, I anticipate, are Democrats. And I just asked them flat out, first thing, how many of you feel that the federal government has really helped you in any way in the last 10 years? There were 60 of them there. Nobody raised their hands. Well, not a surprise. And I said, well, why do you think that the federal government's going to be helping you in the next 5 to 10 years? You know, isn't working. This whole welfare idea of the government will take care of you and will take care of your children and will, you know, lead you into the promised land, it just is fiction. It doesn't work. And then you get into things like education, where we know that so many schools around the nation are failing our children. Why? Well, because they're top heavy. They're top heavy with administration. They are top heavy because the federal government puts out lots of money after keeping some of it, gives it to the states, who keeps more for administration, gives it to the school districts the same, the schools the same, and you end up with the parents not being able to control how their children are educated. So just ask them a question. Just ask them a straightforward question, and they'll begin to understand the value of school competition, and that is, who is in a better position to decide where and how your students should be, your parents, your children should be educated, you as the parents or the federal government? And that's an easy question to answer. They begin to see libertarian values work.
All right, and young people really are the heart of the libertarian movement, it seems, right now, with most of the Ron Paul turnout seem to be college-age students, young to mid-20s maybe. How do you plan on reaching out to the 30s or 40s, maybe even the senior citizen crowd, to get more people into the fold?
Well, it just goes across the board that you tell people we have three main issues. And the first is the economy, the second is jobs, and the third is education. And I spoke a little bit about education. But the first is, regardless of whether you are elder or middle or younger, you have to understand that for every dollar the federal government now spends, we're borrowing 43 cents, for heaven's sake. No company could possibly do that and stay in existence. No household could either. Why do you think a government can? It cannot. And we are mortgaging our future of our country, certainly our children's future, and our grandchildren are bankrupt. So regardless of what level you fit in that, you know, we need some responsibility. Now you look at Congressman Paul Ryan's idea, which is considered to be radical. Are you kidding? It won't balance the budget for what? Decades, 27 years by my calculation. And that's assuming some growth that may or may not be there. We will submit a balanced budget to Congress in the first year. And we can cut spending. You know, we can have institutional cuts because, for example, it costs a lot of money to send our troops over into Somalia, Afghanistan. I mean, it's hugely expensive. Trillions of dollars that we've been spending. Let's save that money. Let's close these military bases all around the world unless they really are contributing to our security. If they are, terrific. Keep them, you know, increase them as far as that's concerned. But most of them, of the 900 to 1,000 foreign bases around the world, we could close 80 of them without breaking stride and probably be more secure by having done that. And there was one woman, I read a column recently, that said she was from Germany, lives in a small town near a U.S. Army base. And she was horrified. Oh my goodness, if you were to close this Army base, we'd lose about 92% of our revenue for our village. And she's probably right. But why spend that money in Germany? Germany is not going to be attacked by Austria in my lifetime. Let's bring our troops home and spend that money in, I'm here in North Carolina or in Illinois or in in California. I mean, these are things that we can do to assist in that 43% sales reduction. And then not only let's audit the Federal Reserve, but let's audit the entire federal government. Let's audit the Pentagon, for heaven's sake. That's not going to betray state secrets, but we're going to use regularly accepted accounting principles with regard to the federal government. Never been done before. Screams of outrage and howling from Congress. Let's just do that. We require our companies, our corporations to do that. Let's require the federal government so we can see exactly what's happening and get away from this pork, away from this needless political spending, because it's our future. It's our future of our country at stake. It's our future for our children and our grandchildren. So let's stop this, tell the truth, and then address what we need to do. And I'm convinced, and Governor Johnson is convinced, that if you have a problem, there are three stages of this, of the approach. The first is you have to recognize you have a problem. I think we're there now. I think people realize not only financially, but from a human rights standpoint and freedom standpoint, we have a problem. Number two is you explain it. You put it straightforward in truthful terms what the problem is. For example, we're spending this much and we're only bringing in that much. And tell the truth to people. If you do that, people are prepared to share the pain. They're prepared to address accordingly. And others, they spread fear about, oh, libertarians would close down Social Security. Nonsense. You know, we are libertarians. We believe in contract. Now, I understand, of course, the federal government's been lying to us for decades, but nevertheless, you've been promised such and such an amount of recovery. You're going to get it. And we'll show them how. We'll show them, for example, yes, we may in fact increase the eligibility dates from 67 years old to 70. People are going to be prepared to understand that because, you know, the life expectancy is so much higher now than it was in the 30s when this began. So I think they'll accept that. But otherwise, then, You can break down, say, and I don't know what the number breakdown would be, 50 years of age or above, you're going to be receiving all of the benefits that you've been promised. 35 to 50, you can opt out if you want to, and say below 30, you'll get into a private system right away where you can place your money into an account that's yours in a conservative investment, and you'll actually have a whole bunch more money later than you would now. How are we going to, we're going to run out of money, of course, doing that, but we would then, as you know, the federal government ridiculously owns huge percentages of many states, most of which are the west of the Mississippi. Why should the federal government own 92% of Nevada, for heaven's sake? Why should they own that much of California or Texas or Alaska? So sell it, auction it off to the highest bidder, say 10% every year for 10 years. We're not talking about selling Yellowstone or that sort of thing, national parks, national monuments, no, but Bureau of Land Management, pasture land, forest land will be better husbanded by private sector than public. And you can just answer one question very quickly and understand that issue, namely, who takes better care of a house, an owner or a renter? And that's pretty easy that the owner does because he has a vested interest in property rights. So that's where you go. And then you take these auctioned monies and you put them into an account that will be there on a one-time basis to bail out Social Security. And everyone will win and will be able to move forward. So don't believe all this fear-mongering. Libertarians care. We care about the environment. We care about your children. We care about you. Trust us, be libertarian this one time. And once again, you can always go back to this bipolar politics that we have if what we do doesn't work.
That was a lot of stuff there. So
you got me. I'm excited. Yeah. You can tell.
Yeah. It's an exciting platform and it's an exciting cause. I certainly think that, you know, one of the things we certainly need to do is bring our troops back and start closing, as you said, start closing down some of these overseas bases that we don't need. And I think it's because, like, if you look at Canada, they're all, like, the population of Canada is all along the border. And you know what they're actually doing? They're ready to come down and invade America. So we got to get our troops back and defend against the Canadians. They're going to come down and get us.
Be careful, because my wife is Canadian, so there may be a dissenting opinion there somewhere.
All right, you talked about you worked in private arbitration. How would you compare and contrast that with your work as a judge in the public sector?
You know, I think it's an embarrassment. I really believe that we in California and around the nation should be able to address and resolve the human problems, the business problems in our society without having to have this cottage industry of private mediation and arbitration. I think it's an embarrassment. But on the other hand, you know, it does work. It does provide a lot quicker, speedier, and sometimes more probative justice for the rich than the poor. But it's there, and it's gratifying for me that I'm able still to keep my hand in as to judicial matters. I am a discovery referee on some cases that just are these pet problems that we have, the problem children in some cases. And I do private mediation, and I'm proud of it. Some of the greatest things I've been able to do as a judge is help people resolve their differences voluntarily, and that feels good. But basically, we are having such trouble with our economy today that the judicial system is being cut back along with others. And of course, you always cut the things that can't fight back. You cut out in schools, you cut out the performing arts and the bands and the rest because they're axed. And it's just a shame. But when our economy gets better, we will strengthen our judiciary. In the meantime, I think it's a necessary evil.
Yeah, we actually had Bob Murphy on Sunday who wrote Chaos Theory, which goes into a lot about private arbitration. It's a good topic. We like to talk about it a lot.
Well, you know, there are sometimes you go back to the Michael Jackson case with the child abuse, and some people really like the idea of the secrecy. You can come to me and I can give you a trial date and it will be firm, and we will you can be sure that you will go to your arbitration on that date. And you can keep it out of the newspapers. That's a little troubling as well, but that's just kind of evolved where if you want private justice and you don't want people to hear about it, you can come to arbitrators and get it done. But the whole thing, I think, is unfortunate, but it's there. And it does certainly contribute a value in many cases. But I'm just sorry that we have to go to that system.
All right. And topic of the Fed comes up a lot, obviously, with libertarians. And our economic woes are about a lot more than just federal spending, and they're a lot about inflation as well. How would you best address the issue of interest rates that are being held too low by the Fed for an extended period of time?
Well, and they are. And the whole Fed, I mean, the whole thing is kind of rigged. It shouldn't be there. We should have never had it. And as Governor Johnson says, if he receives some legislation to end the Fed, he will sign it. And I think that would be a good thing. In the meantime, we need to restrict it. Basically, the Fed is now, they see they have two mandates, and one of them is to affect employment. Well, the answer is no. I mean, they simply are not able to do that. They shouldn't be involved with any of those issues at all. And the answer is, in our administration, we will do everything we can to put an end to that immediately. The other one is, like you say, the interest rates. And honestly, I don't think they should be involved in their capacity in doing that either. But as long as they are, we should restrict that to only have them attempting to control inflation or deflation with regard to our monetary system. And even that, we would, by attrition or some way of being able to restrict it and restrict it into non-existence. But there's also a huge issue with regard to people and their confidence in our monetary system. And so I just don't see that Congress is going to give us that legislation soon. So we're going to have to go to Plan B to try to continue to restrict it and over time.
All right. And as we think in the Austrian Economic School of Thoughts, and in that school, we think that central banking is a core part of the issue overall. And we'd like to have competing currencies to help relieve us of that issue. Would you be on board with allowing competing currencies?
Oh, certainly. You know, I like the idea of spending Krugerrands or even private currency. I tell people that when I was at UCLA, an undergraduate in the 60s, I could buy 4 gallons of gas for $1. And people are amazed. And then I say, you know, today I can still buy 4 gallons of gas for $1 as long as I use a silver dollar. So it isn't the gasoline that's gotten more expensive. It's the inflation. And if we had a gold-backed currency, which unfortunately now I don't think there's enough gold in the world to have our currency be backed by gold. But if we were to go back to something instead of the IOUs, the full faith and credit of the United States, and a good way of doing that is to allow trade in other currencies. And, you know, we could use Krugerrands, and I think we're starting to be able to. Certainly not, we should increase that, because that is something that is a threat to our country. To have this inflation is just so undermining, certainly to senior citizens on pensions and the rest, that we should be able to go to various other currencies in our country without much question.
All right. And as staunch defenders of the Second Amendment, would you be in favor of national reciprocity for concealed carry? And would you support any restrictions on the ownership of firearms by private citizens?
I think that this is a state issue and that I think that states should uphold it. However, there is the Second Amendment, and I believe that the Constitution, like the Ninth and Tenth Amendments, should be upheld. So, you know, the whole thing with regard to gun ownership, just like drug prohibition, gun prohibition just doesn't work. Let's get the government out of these things and enforce what does work, which is, you know, education and responsibility. And that's exactly where we go. I'm not a gun enthusiast, honestly. I do know that you could make a semi-automatic into an automatic very quickly, and all of those differences are just artificial, and we should just drop them, and that people should choose this whole area as one of responsibility that works. I mean, it just works. You go to a gun show, and I've been to several. It's probably one of the safest places you can imagine, and people treat each other very well. That's just what we should be involved with.
Yeah, an armed society is definitely a polite society. And onto the topic of reducing the size of the state, how far do you think we should reduce the size of the state? What do you think we should start with? What do you think we should get rid of first? And how do you think we should go about doing it?
Well, you're saying the size of the state. You mean the federal government?
Yes.
That's really pretty straightforward. I think we should audit the federal government. I think we should have what I would call a sunset provisions for all federal agencies, so that every 5 years on a staggered basis, every single one has to come to some neutral organization to be audited. And we'd see, well, what have you done for the last 5 years? What have you accomplished? What were your goals? How much did you spend? What bang for the buck did we get? And then what is your prognostication for the future? What are your goals? What do you think you'll accomplish? And how much is it going to cost? And I swear to you that there's some agencies we have that would not stand that scrutiny. And I have my own views, certainly Department of Education. I mean, it's really clear, and we were talking about this before, who is in a better position to decide where and how your children should be educated, you as the parents or the federal government. We shouldn't have the federal government involved in education. End of discussion. And so I would certainly strongly feel that we should not have a Department of Education. And in fact, unlike Governor Perry, I can remember other ones that I would abolish. Certainly the Department of Commerce. You know, that's a private issue that the Commerce will go very well, thank you very much, without the government involvement. The Department of Energy. Come on. Those are private decisions that should be made. Yes, I think that windmills, you know, for generating electricity, they have promise. They'll never go far. But if it works economically to people to put those in, let's use them. Or, again, ethanol we talked about. Why should the government choose corn instead of hemp, et cetera? So we don't need a Department of Energy. I would quarrel that we don't need a Bureau of Indian Affairs either, that every pretty much Native American I've spoken to for the last 10 years I've asked, they despise the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Now, honestly, Governor Johnson's experience is different, and he says, Jim, and he's right, there are two types of Native American tribes. One is that have casinos, and the other is that do not. And the ones that do, they don't want the Bureau of Indian Affairs involved. You know, it's insulting. Oh, you can't take care of the education of your children. We'll do it for you. Oh, you can't manage your lands. We'll do it for you. Of course, we've lost billions of your dollars, but, you know, that's government for you. But he says then there are other ones that do not have casinos, and they receive lots of money from the government. And so they like the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Well, we need to address that because, of course, as we all know, giving them money like that just keeps them down, takes away their initiatives, and et cetera. But these are things we really need to restrict. And many times, some of these federal agencies will look at them and say they have 7 different goals. We'll look at them and say, you know, 4 of those are just duplicative. They're unnecessary. Let's cut those back completely. Another 2 of them will modify and aim your focus better, restrict your funding a bit. And 1 of them, you know, congratulations. It's really good. Pat them on the head. Give them the opportunity to shine when it occurs, if it does, and we'll adjust accordingly. All companies go through an audit process, and we should do the same thing with the federal government. So it's clear that 43 cents we're talking about, we can do this. In fact, people will be better off. Now, these are things that we will do. Audit the federal government with generally accepted accounting privileges. It's high time.
All right. And the topic of militarization in police forces has becoming more and more of an issue over the past decade or so. They have like things like Bearcats and drones, and they're really starting to overhaul the surveillance, like in New York City, even. Do you have any plans to curtail that a little bit, maybe bring that back?
Yes. You know, while we were in Tampa, I read in their newspaper that the federal government issued a press release saying we're not going to use drones in Tampa during the Republican National Convention. Well, does that mean that they would use them otherwise? And this is the exception. You know, we have drones flying today. Under the Johnson Gray administration, we're not going to have drones flying in the United States unless you get a court warrant. That is an intrusion on our security and our privacy. It simply cannot be maintained unless you get a court warrant based on probable cause. We have so many intrusions. The TSA, I mean, it's just unacceptable. I used to decline this, what I call nude screening, you know, with these new machines, until I determined that, you know, you opt out and it's more of an indignity and an invasion on your privacy to have them touch every inch of your body twice, once from the front, once from the back. Let's privatize the TSA. You know, the airlines have a huge interest, a big interest in keeping their airplanes safe. They'd be much more successful. You privatize it, put the airlines in charge, and then they will be much more effective, much less intrusive, and of course, much less expensive. The TSA today is one of those groups where it actually supervises itself. That doesn't work. That is a conflict. And we end up with things that you just do not want from every way imaginable. So, you know, you can have some rules if you need to, but then privatize the TSA. Homeland Security, there's no need to have that organization. You know, the federal government, Republicans and Democrats, it's a one, again, a way we talk about Robomney, that they keep us in fear. They thrive on keeping our people in fear because then they get elected and people stop questioning what's going on. I say, no, we do question this. And I'll just tell you an anecdote. I was at an airport, actually in Orange County, California, about to get on a plane, standing in the line to be screened. And there was this young man in front of me, and he had a backpack. And on the backpack, he had this little medal or badge. And I couldn't read it, so I just asked him, what is the badge? And he said, oh, it's for Homeland Security. You work for them? Yes, I do. Do they make you go through the screening? Oh, yes, they do. Okay, fair enough. Let me ask you a question. Will it make our flight safer for me to take off my shoes before I get on an airplane? He looked at me and smiled and said, and I quoted this a lot, ah, the grand illusion of security. That's the deal. There's some things that we as adults simply have to know that the government cannot protect us from life. You know, bad things are going to happen. They're going to happen. I'm sorry. But the government to stand up and say, oh, we can keep all of these bad things from happening is silly. It's intrusive. It's expensive. And it's simply unworkable. So let's do away with the Homeland Security. And by the way, with the word homeland, what does that connote to you? You know, I think every time I hear that term of Hitler's Germany, how did we ever name it that, much less do it? Let's get rid of this and understand intelligent, you know, intelligent foreign intelligence is certainly important. We're not going to underestimate that. But there, we have to tell our people that sometimes there's going to be a Timothy McVeigh. We'll do our best from an intelligence standpoint to head it off, to protect that. But sometimes Aurora, Colorado is just going to happen. I mean, it's just going to happen. Do our best to keep it from happening. Respond when it does. Not put the person that did this in pictures and in newspapers and glorify them because there are copycatters. But just be realistic, be adult about this, and move on with our lives. So these are things that we will bring. They may not be political like the Republicans and Democrats, but they work. And this is where libertarians, Governor Gary Johnson, Judge Jim Gray go.
All right, and we're going to wrap up really soon. We just have one last question. For this radio show, Decline to State, we came together on Reddit, actually, as a community of voluntarists, which means that we always feel that voluntary interaction is always preferable to coercive or forceful action. And would you ever see a point in time down the road that maybe we don't need the state anymore, that we can really handle society for ourselves and come together from a ground-up perspective instead of top-down management, and be able to handle, you know, the daily things? Like, obviously, you have private arbitration. You know that we can handle that without a public court system. Do you think that we can ever handle roads, local police, maybe even national defense without the government?
Honestly, as a practical matter, no. It sounds good. I wish it would be true. I think we do need to have a government. I think we do need to have an FBI, a national judicial force, somebody to oversee our money. You know, I wish we could all have silver Krugerrands or whatever else. And as far as making treaties with other countries, I think that should be a federal issue. I don't believe that the state of Ohio should have a treaty with Mexico or with Italy. So I do honestly think that there are some federal functions. But I also deeply believe in the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. They're still in the Constitution. I cannot tell you how some of our judges have decided the way they have when they just they probably haven't read the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. I don't have any other explanation. In fact, to the degree I, as a judge, have numbers of times been able to swear people into various offices. And of course, you make them swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States of America. Then I make them actually continue to hold their hand up. And I also make them promise that they read it. And I don't think many judges have. Certainly many people haven't. Let's read those. And it does say that unless areas of power are expressly delegated to the federal government by the Constitution, they stay in the hands of the states and they stay in the hands of the people. We go back to that, but in direct answer, other than maybe from an idealistic standpoint, I do think we need and should have a federal government.
All right. Thank you for coming on the show and for reaching out to our listeners. We do have a big base on the libertarian section on Reddit. So this will definitely be an appreciated interview. Thank you for coming on.
I look forward to it. And I can just say that this is the most exciting thing that's happened to me, to be running for president and vice president with Governor Gary Johnson. He is the guy. Just get us in the debates. We will show that by our merits. So if somebody calls you, any of your listeners, you know, you can go to our website, GaryJohnson2012.com. We'll show you how you can contact the various polling companies, the Gallup poll, et cetera. We'll also show you how to contact the Commission on Presidential Debates. Get us in the debates, and at that point, we will merit your votes. It's really exciting. Once again, it's the most exciting thing that's happened to me since the birth of my children. And it's a pleasure to be with you. It's a responsibility as well, and it's downright fun. So good luck to us all. Thanks, and we'll hope to do it again.
All right, and we'd love to have Gary on sometime.
Sounds good to me. I don't control my own schedule, much less his, but I'm sure he'd be happy to be involved with you. Just call our campaign, and I'm sure they can work it up, because he loves to talk about liberty.
All right. Have a great day.
You as well. Take care. Good luck to us all. Bye.